Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I have definitely done my fair share of sexting, including during COVID. Who are you, friend?
I am Bex. I'm a sex educator and porn performer, and I sexed quite a bit. Not recently, but quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a weird time for sexting. We're all a little distracted.
There is currently someone in my DMs who is probably trying to sext me that I'm ignoring right now. They're a stranger. Yeah. I'm not being a dick to someone I know. But, you know, other than that, that's all I got.
They're always there. They're always there for you to tap back into.
Ready to go.
The reason I bring this up is that our guest today is an expert in sexting, among other things. Our guest today is a sex educator, YouTuber, and author of the ebook, A Compassionate Guide to Sexuality and COVID-19. They are super nerdy about sex research and write a bi-weekly bisexual newsletter highlighting some of the latest and greatest in that field. She also wrote her master's thesis on sexting, which is why I've wanted to have her on the show forever. Their name is Eva Bloom. Hi, Eva. How are you doing today?
Hi. Oh my gosh. As a longtime listener, being here for the intro, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's happening.
Is it weird to like see our faces as we're saying the words?
It is a little bit strange and not usual, but extra exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really glad to have you here. I feel like I've had like 12 different conversations with you where I've been like, why haven't I had you on the show yet? And I really don't know. And I'm glad that we're finally doing it.
Yeah.
So I definitely want to talk to you about sexting. I've never met anyone in my life who has done their master's thesis on sexting before. I'm really curious, like, what kind of piqued your interest about that originally, or like what it was that led you to do your thesis on sexting?
Yeah. So as I was like thinking about the questions you sent me, I realized that like a lot of my main focuses in the world of sexuality has been like me operating within straight culture in university and being like, the way of doing this in straight culture is bad. And maybe we could do it differently. So like, when I was like operating within straight culture, some of the best sex I had with my ex-boyfriend wasn't actually sex. It was sexting. I realized that like sexting is one of the only times that like, I think especially straight women can be free a little bit from like the sexual scripts around like men are the doer and women are the doees. It's like not really encouraged for women to like vocalize their wants and needs. And this was this like time to actually be like, the mic is handed to you per se, and you have to be like, oh shit, what do I actually like? And then like, how do I communicate that? And create, I feel like there's just more possibilities to get creative and like create sex beyond the script. So that was really exciting for me.
Yeah, I've definitely found as like a person with a lot of anxiety, sexting can be really helpful for alleviating that because you have time to like compose your message if you need it. And also, like, I love that you can read it back later, like both as like jerk off fodder, but also just like as reassurance that like, oh yeah, someone wants me and likes me. And I feel like when that happens in real life, it's much easier for me to just like instantly forget that that's true and then go back to feeling really shitty about myself very quickly. So it's nice to have this record, and it's also nice to have this space that's like asynchronous where it doesn't matter that like if I was trying to say this thing out loud to a person, I would probably be like stammering and blushing. Like I can just, you know, write it the way I want to write it. It's nice.
Yeah, you can like write it at the phone and then throw the phone away and be like, it has been sent and there's nothing I can do about it now.
I have literally seen her do that.
Yeah. You gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah.
One of the other things I was thinking as you were talking about that and about the way that it kind of creates this space for specifically cishet women to kind of speak to their desires, I was thinking a lot about how, especially in my experience of sexting with cis men, sorry, let me figure out how I want to articulate this.
We all just smiled. We all just had a moment of like, sexting with cis men.
Yes.
And a knowing nod. Oh.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking a lot about like, in the porn work that I've been doing, I tend to target outside of a queer audience, obviously, also a cis gay male audience, in a way that I didn't before. So I have a lot of those folks in my DMs sometimes. So I'm thinking a lot about these experiences lately and in the ways that, like, we're kind of shifting as we're moving out of, like, a physical medium and into a textual or verbal medium for sex. We're moving into the medium that women are socialized to be good at. Mm-hmm. And away from the place where men are socialized to have their skills. So it kind of shifts into this, like, typically I found in conversations, as a woman or as someone socialized as a woman, I hold up a lot of the weight. I am the one who, like, guides it or says the interesting thing. And sometimes I wonder, like, where would this go if I was not directing it, like, that sentence says nothing. I guess I'm deciding the next thing we're talking about, because that's just a three-word statement you gave me. I don't know. And what just that shift in medium does to kind of the power structures and kind of who is directing and, like, navigating this experience, because we don't tend to give cis men a lot of skills for just communication and articulating desires and all of that.
That's true. Yeah, I feel like a lot of it is like, and now my penis? Is that the next step? And you're like,
I mean, that's how they do it in person. Yeah. They're like, great, I present this. Now you know what to do now, right? Like, this is, you can guide this.
And the thing is, like, sometimes you're like, oh, cool, a penis, yay. But, like, a lot of times, if the context isn't right, if they didn't read the room right, you're like, wow, where did that come from? No, thank you. Put it away. Say more words.
Yeah, I don't know. And just, like, being able to, like, have it slow down where you can be, like, in person, maybe we would be, like, rushing onto this thing, but I'm gonna throw it out there that, like, this is a sex act that I would like to explore. And I feel like, yeah, that can be, like, a very empowering thing, too.
Well, and you have this extra degree of power because you can, in the way Kate was saying, you can be like, hey, I don't want this dick, like, in my face right now. And if this was an in-person interaction, there's a lot of power structures and, like, I mean, the appearance of a dick, like, surprised consent is a thing that there's been a lot of conversation around lately, and the nuances of that. So, again, I think we're just putting more power into the hands of folks who, in these interactions in person, the men may not have been told that it was an issue.
I think people talk a lot about, like, oh, the risks and, like, the dangers of sexting. But you're right that there are, like, some of these power flips where, like, you can literally put your phone down and, like, walk away. Wherein, like, if you were to do that in in-person reaction, like, situation, all societal conventions are, like, telling you to not do that. Where, like, that might be the
don't cause
safest
problems. Be a peacemaker.
Yeah, I can only think of one sexual situation in my entire life where I literally got up, put my clothes on, and walked out. And the amount of bravery it took to do that, like, that's the reason I haven't done it more, even though there are definitely times when I was like, I would like to do that, but I don't know. Maybe I'll stick it out and see if things get better. And yeah, I think that's a definite benefit to sexting.
And I was going to say, and comparably, the number of people who have tried to sext you in your DMs and you've been like, no.
What can I help you with? Here are my rates.
Exactly.
But so, Eva, can you tell us a little bit of, more about your sexting research? Because it's been a while since we talked about this, and I can't recall quite exactly, like, what the focus was and, like, what kind of the main, like, findings were, or the most interesting things that you found from it.
Yeah, so my research was looking at Canadian young women's experiences of sexting. I took kind of like a slice of a sample from this big study that was done on women ages like 18 to 90 plus from Elle Canada, which is a magazine. I found that people that I was looking at my stats to prepare. I was like, oh my gosh. I found lots of things. I found that most people, at least from this sample, are sexting either yearly or monthly, which was very surprising. This is pre-pandemic. This is just like a non-pandemic life. Over 80% had ever sexted, but like 40% of them were doing like yearly and birthday sexts. or like monthly sex. The queers, people who are polyamorous and people who are casually dating, were more twice as likely to be sexting on a weekly basis. But all these heterosexual women are like, he gets to see a titty on his birthday, and that's the extent of my sexting.
Okay, question.
Yeah.
How are we defining sexting?
Ooh. So that's one of the biggest limitations from this research, because I was coming in to be like, I'm taking this pre-existing data and analyzing it. Their definition of sexting was like very vague. It was basically just like, you do sexy things with your phone.
Because I would also be curious, like, so if we're dealing with self-reporting on, like, I do a thing I call sexting once a year versus I do XYZ activity, I'm curious how that differs, right? Because I think queers and kinky folks and polyamorous folks and folks for whom sexuality is just kind of permeates the rest of their life, I don't know, I would think of them as having a broader definition of, like, ah, that spicy flirting I do is, that's sexting adjacent, or, like, oh, that, like, very cleavagey selfie I send. Like, there's a lot, like, in the same way I think kinksters round a lot of things they're into up to a kink, and vanilla folks, because they don't speak the language of kink every day, round a lot of things that are probably kind of kinky, down to, like, oh, I'm vanilla. I think we could probably have a similar experience. We might see something similar here, and that's totally just anecdotal, but...
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense, especially since, like, yeah, I think queer people have, like, a broader definition of sex. We also probably have, like, a broader definition of what is sexting. I love spicy flirting. That's great.
Yeah, I've definitely had conversations that were just, like, remember that time that we did XYZ, or, like, it would be really hot to do this other thing. And, you know, even if the conversation gets more detailed, like, I used to have this notion that sexting meant that you were, like, it was, like, cyber sex in the 90s, or it was, like, role-playing, where it's, like, we're talking about it in, you know, the present tense, or, like, here's what I would do. And it really, I think in most cases probably is not that, like, formalized and structured. Like, it's probably more like spicy flirting.
Yeah, yeah, I think I definitely, like, when I started out sexting a lot more, just kind of expected them to mimic actual in-person sexual encounters that I was having or was hearing about, honestly, because here's the thing, because I was expecting them to have that one very clear roller coaster arc, but my in-person sex doesn't either, to be fair. But now I think, yeah, the things I point to as sexting are more like intermittent, like, I don't know, my pet sending me, oh, I'm so hard for you at work right now. Also, what's for dinner? Like, that's more how sexting appears in my life lately.
Yeah, a snippet, a short burst, as opposed to, like, I've laid out the candles. We're gonna do a sexting.
Exactly.
In terms of, like, communication, too, like, part of my big curiosity in doing my study was, like, basically, are people who sext, do they acquire sexual communication skills that are helpful for them down the line? And I found that people who have ever sexted do, like, verbally communicate their wants and needs with their partners more, and also talk more about sexual health stuff, specifically like STIs and STI testing, which is pretty cool. Yeah, but it wasn't until you get to, like, the frequent sexter people where you see they're more sexually satisfied, and when they rate how pleasurable their last encounter was, their ratings of pleasure are higher than the non-frequently sexting people.
That's so cool. That makes me think about, like, all the different reasons that might be, and I do think, like, communication and developing bravery in communication is definitely one of them, but it also makes me think about times that I've, like, journaled about sexual experiences I've had, and just, like, the act of writing about them clarified for me, like, what I liked about them or what I didn't like about them, and gave me information that, like, I wouldn't have had if I hadn't, you know, examined those experiences. And I think, like, the act of writing about something can be really powerful, or even, like, reflecting on something, and sexting is, you know, kind of an odd medium to do that in, but it's definitely one where you can do that.
Yeah, and I think it forces you to be creative about your sexuality in a way that you don't always have to in person. Even just around the language you're using or the things you're saying you're doing. I think we were all, I don't know, it was, very heavily ingrained in me in like middle school at middle school English classes, that you're not wanting to like repeat the same things over and over and find a thesaurus and like, you know, all of that when you're writing. And I find that in me when I'm sexting too. I'm like, oh no, I just talked about their dick in my mouth. I don't, what a hard shit. I've said hard in every text so far, vigorously. but I think it does like it inspire a little bit of creativity that you need to add to it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think, yeah, also, like, yeah, reflecting on, I'm going to be sexting, like, what stuff actually turns me on? Like, what stuff might I want to explore? And, like, having that, like, playground to explore it in sexting might be a way to, like, yeah, build bravery to explore things and, like, do things that you're more excited about with the person.
Do you have any tips for like initiating sexting with someone you haven't sexted with before? Because I feel like this is often people's big stumbling block. Like I hear this from listeners and readers a lot, that they're interested in whether it be sexting, phone sex, Skype sex, especially right now. But it feels sort of awkward to initiate it. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah. In terms of like initiating sexting with people that like you've never sexted with before, I feel like this is like a classic sex ed thing, but like reference a piece of media, be like, hey, so I listened to this Dildorks episode about sexting. Yeah. And also just like leave it up to discussion as opposed to being like, do you want sex right now? Like, do you want to see these titties? You can be like, have you ever sexted before? Like, what do you think about sexting? And then like that can lead into like a conversation of like whether they like to do nudes or sex or like phone sex, and then from there it's like a lower pressure way to feel it out.
Yeah, I love that. That's like one of my go-to bits of advice, and I love taking that and what you mentioned about not necessarily being like, what do you think of this idea in relation to me and us doing it together immediately? But just like raising the idea as a separate thing from the two of you, and like, what do you think of this concept? I also sometimes with sexting, I think one of the issues we run into, and we were kind of alluding to this earlier with folks who just drop their dick in the chat or whatever, is that when people are talking about sexting with someone, whether it's someone new or someone you've sexted with before, they forget to kind of, in the way I was saying earlier, sexting doesn't have to follow the same arc as IRL sex would. You can use that as a template, though, right? You do want to kind of warm up. You can set someone up to take the next step, right? You can like look at that sexting staircase and like put your foot on the first step and be like, God, you know, I was seeing this thing earlier that really turned me on or whatever. And someone will be like, if they want a sex, they can be like, well, why don't you tell me about that? Why don't you tell me more? Right? And they can be like, oh, that's neat. I was doing this other thing. And you can be like, oh, never mind. We're going to leave those sexting stairs over there and move on. But whenever I'm trying to approach something new or guide a conversation in a particular direction, I always try and think of it. For me, I visualize it as a staircase because I'm a weirdo and that's how my brain works. But whatever that works for you, I take one step and wait for them to either meet me or take the next step. And if they don't escalate along whatever path I'm excited about, then I back off, right? That, for me, is enough of a sign that they are not interested. But if you can each take turns taking a step, you can build this conversation together and kind of... you know, be sure that you're in a conversation that you're both comfortable with. Do not jump to the top of the staircase. It's awkward for everyone.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love that so much. Like I, in my sexting workshops, I basically do like a series of examples of like what could be the potential first step. Cause I forget that people are not as immersed in sexuality all the time as we are, maybe.
Yeah.
That I'm like, oh yeah, I could just be like doing this thing and I relate it back to sex. But I'm like, talk about hypothetical dreams you've had. Talk about like hot movie trailers you've watched. Like you can white lie a little bit to like relate something back to sex and like put it in their corner. And then if not, they can be like, yeah, watch that movie trailer too. It's great. Bridgerton, yeah. I've heard good things. And then just leave me. Mm-hmm.
So I want to ask you about compassionate casual sex, because you teach a workshop about that. And I think that that's such an interesting and necessary concept, especially because so many people have casual sex in very not compassionate ways. So I'd love to know, what does the term compassionate casual sex mean to you, and how do you think we can go about having it?
Yeah. So it's basically like, it's basically disrupting the idea that either, like, you have a relationship and that relationship is full of, like, kindness and, like, feelings and stuff, but, like, casual sex, you'll fucking go in and then you get out of there. and if you want more from that, then you're being too needy. It's like, no, mm-hmm. actually, mm-hmm. binaries are silly, and maybe we can have some of that, like, kindness and compassion and sweetness and, like, romance if you would like it in all kinds of relationships, including casual ones.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And this has become such an important concept to me in the past few years, because, like, for a long time, my concept of casual sex was, like, I was going on a lot of Tinder dates. I was, like, seeing people, you know, one or two times. And we were, I mean, I often think of them as not treating me very well. But honestly, like, I probably wasn't treating them very well either. Like, I wasn't, like, checking in a lot or anything. Mm-hmm. But then, like, I think almost four years ago now, I, like, got into a friendship with benefits with a coworker who I had a crush on. And mm-hmm. We're not coworkers anymore. We stopped being coworkers a long time ago, but we have remained fuck buddies. And it has been such a, like, equitable, like, sweet, communicative relationship that has really made me feel like, oh, I don't actually hate casual sex. I just hate the way some people do casual sex. And I also, I mean, mm-hmm. as part of that for me is I really don't like the aspect of casual sex where, like, you have fucked someone so few times or no times at all so that you don't know each other's bodies. Like, to me, I would pretty much rather stay at home and watch Netflix than do that. Whereas, like, casual sex with someone who, like, knows my body and knows what turns me on is just worlds apart for me, and is the type of casual sex that I, like, vastly prefer now.
Mm. Yeah, that's legit. I also, yeah, I like, thought of it while I was, yeah, in, like, college hookup culture. And, like, I had a very good, like, positive friends with benefits relationship, like, kind of early on. And I was like, fuck, like, if I hadn't have had this, I wouldn't have known. And, like, I would have had, like, these negative experiences. Also, when I started having, like, casual sex with queer people, I was like, oh, what's this? People making me snacks. People checking in. People, like, offering me weed. I'm like, this shit's nice. Yeah, somebody said that, like, my compassionate casual sex workshops was, like, queering the straight hookup. And I was like, fuck, yes. Man. Yeah. Because I think queers have been doing this for, and not to say that, like, queer people aren't fuck buddies or, like, can't treat people badly. Mm-hmm. But, like, I think it's, like, a cultural difference in terms of, like, what hooking up is like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, our community is so small. You can't be a dick to someone. Like, they
get around.
Well, right. Or, like, they'll just start dating one of your friends. Or, like, these people don't just vanish from our life the way Tinder hookups sometimes can just disappear into the vast abyss of heterosexuality. Like, queers.
Yeah.
I lived in New York City. There are so many. There's got to be so many queers in New York City. I always saw the same ones. Like,
yeah.
We all know each other.
Yeah.
No, it's good. My brief stint in Toronto queer Tinder. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I still hang out in these spheres with people. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I also do think, like, I'm being glib, but I also do think that a lot of that benefit comes from the fact that, like, queers are used to talking about sex because we've gotta, because it's the thing mm-hmm. that has made us weird our whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a thing you kind of gotta learn to talk about. Mm-hmm. And when you're able to talk about it, you can have a lot more nuance to your friends with benefits kind of relationships. Because mm-hmm. I think one of the big concerns about this kind of compassion and care, it's not because either of these people in these, like, hypothetical straight relationships we're talking about don't care about each other. It's, I mean, sure, sometimes it can be, But I think a large part of it is, oh no, what if my affection gets misconstrued?
Yeah.
What does what does any sort of affection mean, right? Because they're both looking for all of these signs about what they each think about, like, or what this relationship means or whatever, because signs feel more comfortable than conversation.
And there's even the, like, can men and women really be friends? There's a weird shit going on in terms of, like, how intimacy can work, like, within, like, cis hetero structures. Meanwhile, like, queer people are like, yeah, all my friends are hot. I have a small crush on all my friends. That's right? Just part of life.
That's why they're my friends. Like, I like them and I think they're rad and, like, yeah. And, like.
Yeah. I've definitely learned that for myself, like, the best casual sex partners for me are people who, like, I get along with well in a friend level, I find physically attractive, but on some level I know that we were not romantically compatible, we're just not meant to be together in that way, because I do definitely have a tendency to, like, catch feels, as they say, which is definitely one of the struggles with having compassionate casual sex, but, like, my longtime fuck buddy, I'm just like, wow, we would not get along well if we had to actually be dating, and, like, we're both fine with that. It's great. But do you have any tips for, like, walking that line? Because, like, you know, there are a lot of people just not talking about this and just being like, well, I only want to have a casual relationship with this person. And I think that's what they want to. But, like, you know, maybe I'm starting to get vibes that that's not the case or whatever. So do you have any advice on, like, communicating about the fact that you want to have a casual relationship with someone, but, you know, without being a dick about it?
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, if you are looking, like, on dating apps, like, I think just, like, put it in your bio, like, off the top and, like, while you're talking, like, right away, and hopefully people will also gravitate to what you've put there. And I think there are lots of flirty ways to be, like, there's a really good profile that I took a screenshot of, but, yeah, look at, yeah, there are fun ways to say that you're looking for a casual sex partner right off the top.
And I think an important thing about that too is, like, look inward and make sure you are actually looking for a casual sex partner. I know that this doesn't apply to everybody, but, like, I definitely felt some pressure when I was younger to be, like, a cool girl, chill girl. And part of my image of that was, like, being up for and into casual sex. And I definitely, you know, pursued it even at times when I maybe was not in a great space to be doing that, or maybe didn't really want that. Like, maybe I really kind of wanted someone to, like, cuddle me and tell me I'm beautiful and be there for me in a continuing kind of way. And yeah, like, just because the culture, you know, has certain ideas about casual sex and whether or not we should want it doesn't mean that you need to take those on board.
Yeah. And I think, like, reflecting on, like, what type of casual sex you want and, like, what types of things you know, like, spark the catching feels, like, reflecting on that and, like, taking the time to, like, write that shit down and, like, be very clear about it. So if somebody does, like, bring up something, you can reference the list and be like, actually, it's not gonna vibe with me.
Yep.
I do also, so I love what you were talking about leading your OkCupid or Tinder bio or whatever with this information. I love to put, like, the stuff that I know will be deal breakers right in my header so people can kind of self-select out of whatever, or, you know, write in that first little paragraph. But I do think it's helpful to kind of re-articulate those things, because I think in the same way Kate was talking about how some people who say they're looking for casual sex, like, that may actually not be what they want. They may feel like that is kind of the thing that they're shooting for. I think there are also plenty of people who think casual sex means right, but until I find the one and settle down. Which is certainly a thing I experience in polyamory stuff too. Like, anyone that who's OkCupid says interested in monogamy or non-monogamy, I'm like, no. No. Unless you know you want non-monogamy, like, unless you are settled, I'm tired is the issue. So, no. but I do think it can be helpful to be like, no, this isn't, like, I'm not looking for a stepping stone. This isn't auditions for something beyond casual sex. Like, you aren't going to talk me out of this. Like, I have done some reflecting. This is what I want. This is what I know I want. And this is why. And integrating it into your conversation, like, give them the opportunity to opt out early, right? Don't waste your time or theirs. That's fine. But once you're having a conversation, like, it does make sense to, I think, integrate it in again and make sure that you both have the same definition of casual sex and the same goals with it.
Yeah, for sure. My friend Hannah recently shared this thing that she did with her partner, which was to have a conversation like a job interview, which I think is very cute, right? Be like, okay, what are your past qualifications? are you looking for part-time, full-time, flexibility, special skills? Like, I think that could be, right? I think it's a very cute way to, like, do some boundary chats.
One of my go-to first interview questions is like, tell me a little bit about why you're interested in the position. So,
right? I'm looking to acquire some new skills. Yes. I just learned how to rope top. It's not that big of a job.
Yeah, we need some sex educators who like make people fill out a Google form to go on a date with them, which I find very aspirational. That's just good shit. I love to know more info about people. All right, so kind of a related concept is being a, quote, slut for kindness, which, like, you created these t-shirts that say slut for kindness. I'm actually so bummed out because mine is in Toronto right now waiting for me, but I'm in New York because of COVID travel restrictions. So I can't wear my super soft slut for kindness shirt. But I'm wondering, what does that idea mean to you, and, like, how did that become an important idea for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, like, really an extension of, like, the compassionate casual sex idea, like the idea that you can be generous with your kindness and your like sweetness in all types of relationships. And also it means that you value kindness in like other people and other partners. Maybe that, yeah, if you're kind, I'll fuck with you. Like, let's let's kiss. Yeah.
Yeah, I very much relate to this. And like, the older I get, the more I think kindness is really kind of like the number one quality for me. And it sucks that like generally we only learn this by like living through many people being unkind to us. But like, it is amazing how slutty I feel when someone is actually nice to me. Like, I just, you know, I think that there is actually like a physiological reason for this, in that like, if someone's being kind to you and you know that they're kind, you can be more relaxed around them, you can feel safer around them. And I really do think that that like stops the inhibition of blood flow that people like Emily Nagoski say happens when we're experiencing like physiological stress. Like, I just feel more able to be turned on around people who I know are kind on like multiple levels. And I think people like don't necessarily understand this. I think a lot of people like will be unkind as like a defense mechanism, especially in like casual sex scenarios, trying to set a boundary by, you know, kind of being rude. And hoping that the other person will get it. And, like, you just really don't have to do that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've been thinking on kindness a bit lately, and kind of the difference between, like, a lot of folks use kindness and niceness fairly interchangeably, and I, like, I'm sure I do too in times. But I've been very much, like, I've been putting a lot of thought to the difference of between them and the way that kindness can kind of can sometimes be just like showing up and having the complicated and difficult conversations. And kindness comes in my mind when I'm using it from a place of it comes from a place of goodwill and good intentions and empathy, but is not always like is not defined by pleasantness all the time. Because I think that can be a matter of like smoothing things over, and kindness for me is very tied to vulnerability, and I think all of that is like really, really valuable in a sexual partner and someone that you're going to be that intimate and close with. Yeah, and I just, I don't know.
Like a genuine care for the other person. And sometimes, like, what you, what is best, and like from a genuine care place, is like not to be like pleasant or nice. Yeah, to be like, this is what's up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's what I really love about that, because I think on the surface, it is a phrase of like, oh, sweet kindness and like fluffy things and like, love, I like love. All of the, yeah, exactly. Like, but I think there is like a lot of strength to both the sentiment and to kindness in and of itself. And I think it is like a really valuable trait to bring to your relationships.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk with you about sexuality during COVID, because you did write this amazing ebook about it. I'll link it in the show notes. It is very valuable. I read through it very quickly because it was just like a really good snappy read, and I was like, there is so much like actionable information in here about achieving a better sexuality during this like really difficult and stressful time. So I would love to know, like, what do you see as like the biggest challenges people are facing sexually during the pandemic, and like how can we advise them on those?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think like the biggest challenge, like, we always have like cultural expectations about what your sex life is like supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. And I feel like now, because there is like so much stress and things are changing so much, a lot of people are really bumping up against this idea of like, my sex life isn't meeting these expectations, like in a more dramatic way than like they have before. Mm-hmm. And it can be like, I'm a failure. Like, it means like, and being really, really tough on themselves and not knowing like how to like recalibrate or like find pleasure again. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a big yeah, overarching thing.
I think it's a really interesting time for like the whole social media thing of like, you're comparing your insides to other people's outsides, because for many of us, like our entire social life for the past year or so has been social media and the internet. And so, you know, you don't get that sort of like realness of seeing people face to face and realizing that they're just humans like you. So I could definitely see how it would be very easy to fall into like comparing yourself to other people. Especially in this time where like we're already like so lonely and stressed out in many cases, and like, you know, there's just stressors upon stressors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think like sex drive is a big one too. Like people being like, I haven't had partnered sex for like X amount of time. Like, is something wrong with me? And my like science brain is like, nah, man, you're living with like constant, like low level stress. Like for your body, that is that's not great for you. It means that you might not have a big high sex drive, and that's like really okay and normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any advice? I know that you do. I mean, I'm phrasing that as a question because it's a podcast, but do you have any advice for people who are struggling with low desire, low libido, but who like don't really want to be feeling that way, like who miss that pleasure and connection, but like are just feeling sort of meh about getting back into it?
Yeah. So in the ebook, I talk about the dual control model, which is a sex research theory, which basically says that, like, as you move throughout life, you are, like, taking in stimuli, and that stimuli can either put, like, a brake on your sex drive or, like, be a turnoff, or it can, like, turn you on and, like, be an accelerator. So in terms of, like, sex drive, you can identify things that are, like, breaking your sex drive. So, like, if you have kids, like, put them in front of a movie for 2 hours. Or, like, be more strict on, like, your office hours, or try and, like, put your work in a separate place, in the closet, perhaps. So that, like, when you're going to do sexy things, you aren't, like, having, like, work stuff on the brain. And then also, like, trying to, like, move towards accelerator things and not, like, not being like, well, I want to now have sex like X amount of times. Like, no, be like, okay, what are like the small steps of like moving towards curiosity and pleasure?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I very much subscribe to this concept of the dual control model. It really, really resonates for me. And one place I've been noticing that lately is like, I, despite the fact that I'll be writing about sex all day, I like won't really think about sex for myself until I'm like done my work. I close the laptop, I walk away, I'll usually like get in the bath lately, I'll have my Kindle, maybe I'll read some erotica on the Kindle, And because there's like nothing around me to stress me out, and I've like basically like set aside my stressors for the day, that's when like I'm able to notice like a potential flare in desire or arousal, mm-hmm. in a way that like would have been unthinkable to me like even like an hour previous. And yeah, I mean, it was really powerful for me to learn that there are actual like science-backed reasons for that effect, because there's something about like, you know, when you're going through a stressful time and you just like stress yourself out even more about the fact that you're not having sex, like it, there can be an element of like being self-critical, like why aren't I, you know, being the kind of sexual person that I want to be, and just like being really hard on yourself. And like there are actual reasons scientifically why you're having a tough time with it, and it's okay to be having a tough time with it.
Oh man, I like my version of like a bath or whatever is that I went back like to prepare for this podcast recording. I went back and listened to some old episodes, and I was like, oh my god, I'm like, kink is a thing. This is just not being existing in my brain. And I didn't like go listening to the podcast being like, I'm gonna listen to Get Turned On, but just like the reminder of like sex outside of work is a powerful thing.
Yeah, I think that like curiosity and playfulness are really underrated, especially when it comes to sex. And when we're really stressed out is the time when we tend to forget about those things the most. And because they seem really frivolous and like potentially silly or juvenile or whatever, but they are so important to feeling like a normal, functional human in my experience.
Yeah. It's a thing I think I've mentioned before on the show, but sometimes I will even just have conversations like if my partner and I both, kink particularly is a thing that the past couple of months we're like, we're kinky, right? I think this is a thing we know how to do. I think this is, which is hilarious, because if like a fucking legit vanilla person saw the sex we have every day, they would be like, what do you mean you don't do kink? What are you talking? Oh my god. But that's a whole other conversation. Things that for us like feel like high production value kink, basically. Scenes that I planned, someone's getting hit, someone's getting tied, whatever. It feels really foreign. So sometimes if we're trying to get in the mood, or like intellectually we both want to do these things, but gosh, it feels like a lot of effort. We will talk about, well, when we have a scene, what will we do? What, like, If we decided to have a scene tonight, what would that look like? And sometimes that turns into, like, three sentences later, they're getting up and they're like, you know, I'm just going to get the rope. It's just going to be nearby. And then we're like, I don't know, we'll just try this time. And, you know, and wind up convincing ourselves to do the thing that we want to do. And other times we're like, wow, yeah, that does sound fun for another night in a future me, certainly. But it's just a wild, like, a chance to try it out.
That's awesome.
While we're talking about kink, we actually got a listener question about kink that I was curious about your thoughts on. Because you know, are interested in casual sex as a concept, this listener was asking, how can I figure out which kinks I'm comfortable playing with casually and which I'm not? And I really love this question, because I have totally had this experience of, like, I think spanking is one of those kinks where, like, pretty much as long as I believe that the person is safe and is not going to abandon me and knows how to spank me, I'll be okay receiving a casual spanking. But something like DDLG, where, like, I'm role-playing as a little girl, and for me, DDLG doesn't even really feel like role-play. It feels like I'm going into an actual, you know, part of myself. That, for me, feels a little bit too intimate for a casual scenario, and it actually took me a long time to figure stuff like that out. I know kink isn't like your main focus, but I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on like figuring out which kinks, you know, are okay with you for casual play and which are not.
Yeah. I mean, I think sexting can be one way to like dip your toe in the water, be like, how does it feel to like sex this person? Or like, I think, like imagining like how, if I were to do this thing, does it feel good in my body? Does it make me feel stressed in my body? Yeah, I don't know, like reading fan fiction about like casual scenarios and like imagining yourself in that person's position, being like, how does that feel?
Yeah. I think that's excellent and better advice than I could give, because when Kate read that off, I was just over here like, oh no, fuck it up. and then it's going to suck, and you're not going to do it again. That was the path I took. Yeah. I'm sure there's a smarter one, but that's all I've got for you.
I do think it is one of those things where, like, you may not actually be able to predict how you're going to feel about something, especially if it's a kink that's new to you in general. Like, before I ever did DDLG stuff, when I was just, like, reading fanfic about it and thinking about it all the time, like, I don't think I would have been able to even begin to guess, you know, in what context I would feel comfy doing it, because you just don't really necessarily know until you try. In that case, I think, like, a really important thing is, like, setting up aftercare and good support so that if it doesn't go well, you'll, you know, have things you can do about it. Like, I know that, like, texting my best friend Bex after some of those disastrous encounters was definitely, like, a helpful aftercare thing for me, because it enabled me to, like, talk through what I'd just been through and also kind of, like, be emotionally, you know, comforted and re-anchored after all of that. So, yeah, I mean, you might just have to try it, and it might go badly, and, you know, be prepared for that if you can.
Yeah, I think also, like, going slow, start, and then build. Also, like, let the person know if this is the first time you're exploring something, and, like, maybe set up, like, be like, let's check in a little bit more frequently at the beginning to, like, make sure that everything's cool.
I was glib when I said, you know, you fuck it up, you notice that it went wrong, and you fix it. Noticing that it went wrong is a process and is a skill. So I think there is definitely something to be said for taking a moment and reflecting on how you feel after a scene. And, does that feel okay? Do you feel like you were maybe more vulnerable than you were prepared for, or, like, that you're not feeling cared for or connected in the way you wanted to afterwards? I also notice a lot of the kinks that, for me, other than the stuff that is, like, very core to, like, who I am and my kink, a lot of the stuff that, for me, is really hot with someone that I'm closer to versus a more casual encounter, I actually don't really crave unless I am in a relationship with a person that I want to do. Like, I hit a level of vulnerability, like, when I'm in love with someone, when I'm connected with someone, that, like, new kinks just appear, and I'm like, well, shit, okay, I'm into those things. And for me, it's just very clear that I'm like, those are not things that I want to do with, like, lots of people. Those are things that I want to do with this people. So that may also be true as well.
Yeah. Like, a video game, you've unlocked another level, and it's like, bloop, 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 new kinks have arrived.
Another thing that occurs to me is, like, if you have friends who you do sex or kink stuff with ever, or who you think would be open to that, that might be a good middle ground for exploring things that you're not sure. Because, like, a friend is, you know, not quite casual in the sense that you're probably going to have, like, a continuing ongoing relationship with this person, but, you know, it's not quite a heavy romantic relationship. So, you know, if you try spanking or rope or whatever with your friend and you feel kind of weird about it, maybe that's related to that friendship, or maybe it means that you're not into doing that outside of a romantic relationship. Could at least give you some, you know, experience to reflect on and think about it more.
And it gives you a chance to kind of explore whether it is intimacy or romance that is important for that kind of connection. Because there are certainly things that I'm like, this is hella intimate, but, like, I don't need to be in love with you. I just need to, like, trust you and know that you're not gonna, like, judge me for this headspace or whatever. So, yeah, that is also certainly a thing to consider.
Yeah, I also think a good general rule is, like, if there's any part of that kink that feels like it could be triggering to you, whether it reminds you of a shitty past experience or anything like that, probably not a good idea to do it with a casual partner, or at least with someone who you don't think you're probably going to see again, or who you don't think would, like, hold space for you, you know, to have a conversation about it afterward. Yeah, I think, like, a lot of my reasons for, like, not being into DDLG casually is there's, like, some related trauma there for me. So, like, not great to be doing that with someone who's just going to, like, walk away and get on the subway and never see me again.
Also rude as hell to do to them who, also didn't sign up for whatever you might unlock in that experience.
Deep trauma, like, and grief work with your casual Tinder hookup. Yeah. Fun time. Fun Friday night. You love to see it.
They're like, you're just going to hang out. It's like...
Eva, thank you so much for joining us for this episode. This has been such a delightful discussion, because as always, you're such a delightful person. I just think you're, like, honestly one of the smartest brains in sex education today. I'm just glad to know you. I'm going to stop being so effusive. Would you tell the people where they can find you online and about anything that you have coming up that you want them to know about?
Yeah, so folks can find me on Instagram at What's My Body Doing, also on YouTube, What's My Body Doing, also on TikTok, What's My Body Doing. yeah, I am running some workshops this next couple months. I'm running my Sex and COVID workshop. It'll be maybe the day after this comes out. I'm not sure. It's next Wednesday, so February 3rd. Okay. And then I also have my sex, like my guide to sexuality in COVID, which is always available. And then I'm running Compassionate Casual Sex at the beginning of March as the, for the first time online, as a workshop. Yeah. So all my American friends who are always like, I would like to come. And I would be like, sorry, now you can come. but yeah, those are all my things.
Cool. Yeah, I will put all those links in the show notes for folks to check out, because you're a wonderful educator. They really should check out those workshops. I have been Kate Sloan. I have a sex blog at girlyjuice.net. I have a newsletter that I write that's called Submissives. The most recent installment was – I was like low energy today and just decided to write the story of the time that I tried to – go into a music venue and there was a dildo in my bag and I had forgotten there was a dildo in my bag and they like checked my bag on the way in and it was a really awkward encounter. So that's at katesloan.substack.com. And I am on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where is your stuff, Bex?
I'm Bex. You can find my writing and information about my workshop at bextalksex.com. And I'm on Twitter and theoretically Instagram at bextalksex. you can also find my porn and pictures of my ass at Billy Lore on Twitter, and all the links to my Just for Fans and many vids are there. Together with the Dildorks, you can find us at thedildorks.com or by searching the Dildorks in your favorite podcast app, which is also where you should have rated and reviewed us at this point. I say it so many fucking times. Go do the thing. God.
But that's a new one, though. That's a new level to be like, you should have already done it. That's
it. Listen, we're at 4 years of episodes. You hear this every week.
I feel like I feel like I have, but I don't know whether it was on my dad's iTunes account. So it could say my dad's name, could say mine. But I was like, either way, I gotta let the people know.
I
love that.
I inadvertently signed up for a service that emails me automatically to tell me whenever someone writes a new review, which is like not great for someone with anxiety,
except that
almost all the reviews are positive. But so yeah, if you do write a review on iTunes, I will receive it in my inbox and it will make me smile. So think about doing that. Our theme song is by the wonderful Protodome. Our logo is by the terrific Amy, who is at Starboots_ on Twitter. And I really fucked myself
up.
Our listeners are you. Thank you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
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 Thank you. That was fun.
And I want to do a thing to help me sync it up in editing. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to count to three in a rhythmic manner. And where four would go, we're all going to clap at the same time. Just sync it up. Yeah. Okay. Everybody ready?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm like weirdly nervous because I don't do this on Zoom, which is so strange. Like, it's weird to be nervous that you're in a different medium than you used to, but like that's the online world we're living in. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Counting to three and clap on four. One, two, three.
Cool. See, the issue with this test is it relies on me having rhythm.
That's okay. As long as it's close enough, it's fine.
You said rhythmically, and I was like, that's true. You could be like one, two,
right. Yeah.
It should not be.
That would not be of much help to anybody, I don't think.
I also think The goal was, if I started, I would remember the idea I had before I got to the next words, and it didn't happen. No, okay, here we go.